welcoming everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content, you can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's given me grace because I've got nothing today, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Hey, man. It's somehow a Tuesday in the second week of April, and it feels like we've had 11 months of the year already. So I'm giving it to you. I'm giving you the free pass, my guy. Joined by a man. That's it. Now you're a man. I am always thrilled to join you, Gerald, the manliest man that I know. A man who spits in the face of classic and toxic masculinity, embracing an intellectual, compassionate form of manhood that we could all learn from. If we just end the podcast right there. That's your takeaway. Be like Gerald.
Wow. Wow. That was... Okay. Wow. I don't know if follow that up. So let's just move right in, Kyle. I appreciate the kind words. We're going to talk about all of the stuff tonight. Baseball currently in action, trailing Texas State 5-2 in the fifth inning. But we'll talk about a big weekend win for them getting back on the road. Softball dominant over Iowa State. Feels good to get back on their winning ways after getting swept a week ago. Big 12 match play. The women brought home the title yet again. The men are off this week. Men's tennis, getting it done. Women's tennis, not quite getting it done. That's okay. We'll obviously close the show out with some Godzilla-tron and bang the drum. But the newly minted number 19, Texas baseball, took the weekend series from Kansas State, taking on Texas State in the midweek series. Texas trailed 5-1 heading into the bottom of the eighth on Friday night. Managed to overcome, thanks to some generosity, we'll say, from the bats, and then some generosity from the Kansas State pitching staff came up with the win on Friday, 6-5. Saturday had another bullpen meltdown for Texas after a solid start from Travis Steele. Texas only had 5 hits in that game as well, so not necessarily a great outing from the bats either. And then Sunday, Texas absolutely did what it needed to do on Sunday to get it done. Charlie Hurley had himself a day as well. I think there are like 2 stories for me, Kyle, in this weekend series against Kansas State, and I'd love to hear your perspective. But like, there is the bats getting it done on Sunday, and really Texas finding some sort of stroke from the plate. These young players really feeling it early in the season. We talked about I think back to that like LSU game where they just got absolutely shut down from the plate, and now we're 2 months later, and they're finally. I mean, they're putting up crooked letters and. Every game they scored 18 runs this weekend or 19 runs this weekend, excuse me. So like big bats for the weekend. And then the bullpen steal once again. Texas made changes in the offseason to potentially shore up the bullpen, and it seems like they're still not necessarily able to get it done.
Yeah. crooked numbers, Gerald, crooked letters would be Mississippi. I will say, yeah, it looks familiar. And last year was a great season that ultimately came up short, but was a lot of fun to watch the home run brigade. But it's familiar in that, great outing, 6 innings from Lucas Gordon, great outing from Travis Staley. And both of those, they needed late runs. They didn't get them all on Saturday, but Friday being able to rally back in the bottom of the eighth, downtown Porter Brown quickly making himself an absolute legend and household favorite, right? I think he might have a second year. He may have only have 1 year. He's on maybe on the Micah and Tico 1 year legend plan. But, him and Dylan Campbell, who, it's fantastic players both in the field. Campbell had some throws from the outfield that showed he's got true, 5-tool stuff at his best. The big double G, the G Wagon, Garrett Guillemette. I mean, these are the names we've been talking about, and their bats are coming on, right? It's last year it was an anomaly, right? It was Ivan Melendez being Superman, and then other dudes being like, yeah, I can do that too. And, you know, like four guys just being Herculean. We didn't expect that this year. And so the fact that they're able to score some runs, six runs in a win, five runs in a loss, eight runs in a win in the weekend series, it's a lot of runs. But it's not like they're putting up 19. You know, they're good runs, right? We hope the pitching staff can keep things. If you can get over five, you can win, right? That's kind of your back of the napkin math. If you can get over five runs, you should be able to win that game. They got five runs on Saturday and didn't win. And that's where you have to look at it. And it is a familiar, when we say the bats are coming alive and that's familiar, it's familiar to last year as well, where we had some arms that just, you know, the other teams teed off on and couldn't produce consistency. And so, you know, it's something to watch. I do like, you know, you mentioned Charlie Hurley on Sunday. I do like that he's kind of coming into his own a little bit here. He's a guy who we were interested to see where he would slot in from the moment he arrived at USC. He's been a great reliever, a long-term, you know, kind of long innings eater reliever. He's been a spot starter. You know, seems to have the stuff to be a starter. So, I don't know. Again, the bullpen still, they're looking for some things. And you're, you know, well into conference play. It's a tough time to be looking, but you know, you bring in, you don't always have Monday night starters, but your Monday night starter Kobe Minchie gets his first ever against Texas Tech, first ever start, first ever win, right? Three innings pitch, gave up, you know, three hits, four Ks, looking like a dude who could grow into a starter, you know, later in his career, right? I'm excited by some of that. And again, this is a young team, so it's the way I used to watch the Astros back before they were the Astros that everyone used to like when I, you know, moved to Houston in 2010 and there were 100 lost seasons. But boy, you could see some great prospects. Look what the future might be. We're somewhere in between that, right? I don't think this is a bottom of the barrel team. Pierce has had one of those that finished last in the Big 12. It's not that. It is no way that, right? They won the weekend series. They won at least Monday against Texas State, but you know, it is still young, and you are still looking at, let's see what we can do this year, but with an eye towards the future.
Yeah, and I think this was expected to be a rebuild for Texas, and it looks more akin to a reload, where there's obviously been a drop-off, right? And Texas set records both in the field and from the plate last year, so, like, you can't expect that every year. But the fact that they're not significantly worse than they were a year ago, let me say it differently. The fact that they didn't completely fall off the cliff like we expected them to, especially early in the season after that kind of disastrous opening tournament, like, this has been a welcome surprise. And I think you have to give Coach Pierce credit for, you know, you and I were questioning in the offseason, why weren't they as aggressive as maybe we thought they should be in the portal? And it seems like they had the pieces that they wanted. They wanted to get the young guys experience. And you know, we talk about it a lot in basketball, but, you know, baseball is another game where it pays to get old. Part of the reason why Texas was so good a year ago, it's because they had a bunch of old dudes on the squad. And so getting your young guys some experience and really getting those guys acclimated is the way to build a championship program. So I really think that the choice is playing out really well. It's not going to be perfect. Obviously, they're trailing now. They scored a run to close the gap, but they're now trailing 5-3 on a Tuesday, right? But that's, you know, a midweek game. You trot out some arms you don't normally trot out. You get some pitchers some time on the bump. But, you know, Texas has an opportunity to overachieve in a year that we really didn't expect a ton from them. And so I'm not mad about it at all.
Gerald, I'll close this just in case. I feel like thinking back to myself, I may have come off a tinge more pessimistic than I meant. Texas baseball is currently atop the Big 12 standings, and they've played two of the next closest teams. This is still a really good team that could very likely win the conference this year. You know, Texas baseball thinks in Omahas and dog piles and national championships. And so it's a slightly different standard. But this is a good team, a very, very good team that has a chance to, you know, like the young teams always can, get hot at the right time and maybe mess around and do something like that.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I don't know if that result will hold. They've played fewer games than some of the teams around them, so they sit atop based on win percentage, not necessarily games won or lost. But, I mean, top team is top team regardless. And like I said, this is an overachievement for this group. So if they're able to, you know, stay in those top few teams, you know, get a good seed in the Big 12 tournament, they've got an opportunity to again, show out and position themselves well for a postseason run. Do we think this is an Omaha team? They're starting to show that maybe they are an Omaha team. They're not, I wouldn't put a mortgage payment on that or anything, but you know, if they play up to the standard that we've seen them play in a couple of spots, you know, they could catch somebody by surprise and end up going to Nebraska.
Never counted out the University of Texas at Omaha.
So next up for Texas, heading to Waco, driving up I-35 to take on the Baylor Bears. We're coming off of a series win over those dirty, dirty, dirt-burgling Oklahoma Sooners. On the other diamond, softball absolutely dominates Iowa State. Feels good to put them in the dirt. They started their series on Thursday with an 8-0 win in 5. Got a good run rule. Texas put up 6 in the third inning. Friday was 8-1. Saturday, 9-1. They got Sunday off for Easter. But all around, great performances from both the plate and the circle.
Yeah, I really love this this softball team. Again, another team, we've said it every single week, that's very young. But I'll take the 8-0, 8-1, 9-1 weekend. Those are nice weekends. Basically, just keep that up, right? Keep the young guns doing what they do. Reese Atwood putting herself right now the freshman of the year in the Big 12 seems to be a competition between 3 or 4 different Longhorns. Reese Atwood has maybe took a week or two longer to announce herself, but has come on incredibly strong in this one. Sitlali Gutierrez improved to 11-2, matching teammate Mac Morgan. Mac Morgan, not a freshman, rarely on this team someone who's not, but the others that we've talked about at length, a lot of freshmen, a couple sophomores, a lot of freshmen, young team, a lot of talent, a lot to love.
Absolutely a ton to love. The ladies also will spend some time in Sin Marvelous this week, heading down to take on Texas State on Wednesday before hosting those mighty Kansas Jayhawks this weekend for the weekend series. But now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. We're starting off with a championship. Women's golf claims the Big 12 match play championship, came in as the 2 seed and knocked off top-seeded Kansas in that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, they were solid all the way through. We've seen them be really good in match play. I think this is a good collection of golfers, maybe, that, you know, you see a team that they like the competition. They feel they can, if they are putting that bar against themselves, go up and beat just about anyone. You really like that mentality, right? That's how you get to the national championship. But they've been good in stroke play, right? This is a highly ranked women's golf team, but they've been good in stroke play. They've been very, very good in match play. This is their second match play. They won the Cactus Cup earlier, where they beat number 4 South Carolina, number 6 San Jose State, and this one, obviously, number 12 Baylor, number 17 Iowa State. They put down on their way to the championship. So they beat Oklahoma State, tied Kansas, beat TCU, OU. They basically went through the entire Big 12 and proved they're the best.
Bo Park, Sophie Go, and Bentley Cotton led the way for them. Bo Park, obviously, 6-1-1 on the weekend. Just absolutely dominant performance. Both of the match play events they've played in this year, won the Cactus Cup earlier in the year. Next up for them is the stroke play championship that'll happen in 2 weeks. They'll take a week off and let the men try to bring home a conference title as well. Top-ranked men's tennis gets it done against number 41 Baylor with a complete sweep of the Bears. Gotta love putting the Bears in their place, especially in tennis.
Yeah, it's never not fun to be Baylor. It's always fun to be number one and win. It makes you stay number one. Elliot Spezieri, the entire team was great, but Spezieri himself was a particularly great Big 12 Player of the Week. Sets a new Big 12 record with the breaking his own record of career victories, as well as tying his record from last season with 5 individual Big 12 Player of the Weeks in the same season. Guy's good. Number one player in the country for a reason.
Very, very good. Number 11 women's tennis falls to number 7 North Carolina State, 5-2. The Wolfpack took the doubles point and won all 3 of the ranked matches for that one. Tough outing for the ladies. NC State's a good squad.
Yeah, I mean, we said last week when we talked about this one, this would be a real test, right? The women's team is really like just a collection, a strong team. They don't have a Peyton Stearns. They don't have a top ranked singles individual player, but they're strong top to bottom, and we knew NC State was going to prove a really tough challenge. So this kind of, they're getting to their end of their season. This was their last out of conference match before, you know, they close out the conference play and head into the postseason. You know, NC State could be someone they see in the postseason, so hopefully they got a read on them and figure out exactly how to match up in the, you know, in the postseason, because NC State could be a top 4 or 5 team in Texas, you know, was beaten. So hopefully they can shake it off and a home match in North Carolina, maybe distracting by the beautiful crisp air of the mountains. I don't know. It's always tougher on the road. Hopefully Texas can shake that in the postseason.
So the postseason is just around the corner for them. They've got Baylor this weekend in their last conference matchup before the Big 12 championship will happen in 2 weeks. So that'll be fun for them.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. NBA season coming to a close. 7 former Longhorns are set for the 2023 NBA playoffs. For the first time in NBA history, there are no Texas teams in the NBA playoffs, but there are Texas Longhorns with 7 of them. I'll give a quick recap just because, you know, good time to take a look at some of the seasons that were had, right? Mo Bamba, Jared Allen, Kevin Durant, Jackson Hayes, Jericho Sims, Tristan Thompson, and PJ Tucker. You got some young guys, you got some old guys in there. Jared Allen is finished up a good season, a really good season. 3-time All-Star now. He had 14.3 points per game, 9.8, 10 rebounds and a block and a half in 32 minutes, shooting 64% from the field, 73% from the line. Got him to that 4-seed spot where they'll play the Knicks. Great year for Allen. He just keeps getting better. Mo Bamba joined those Lakers, if you recall. The trade deadline, we joked that, you know, that was the biggest move, and it's kind of worked out. He's been pretty well in his fifth season in the NBA since he was February over there. In 9 games with the Lakers, 40 of them with the Magic, he averaged just under 7 points, 5 rebounds, and a block a game. Kevin Durant's, you know, his 15th year in the NBA. He came over that same day as Mo Bamba on February 9th on trade deadline day. He only played 47 games this year, 8 of them with his new team, the Suns. He averaged what Kevin Durant does, 29.1 points, 6.5 rebounds, 5 assists, a block and a half, right? He's incredible if he can really just stay healthy at this point in his career. They're a 4-seed. Really interesting matchup with the Clippers in that first round. Jackson Hayes, had a solid year. He's playing about 15 minutes a night. Gives him the energy off the bench. Is a big 5 points, 3 rebounds. Shooting pretty well. He's over 55% for the year. Knows his kind of strengths and is staying in there. Jericho Sims in his second year is you know, interesting in that Knicks matchup where they will be playing Jared Allen. You might see some Longhorn on Longhorn big. Sims averaged 5 rebounds and about 4 points in 15 minutes a contest. He shot 78% this season. He's efficient at what he does. Jump high, be strong, grab rebounds, dunk the ball. Tristan Thompson was the one that surprised me the most, right? He got signed late, I think in the last week ish. I mean, very recently, basically for the Lakers in his 12th season. So he'll be a playoff addition for those 7-seed Lakers. And then PJ Tucker, who knows how many more of these we have left, so let's cherish it. In his first season with the Sixers, he played 75 games and just did PJ Tucker things. Played 25 minutes and put up a ton of points. You know, he's shooting just a hair under 40% from the 3-point line. Didn't expect that as big body PJ in college, but he's carved out his niche as kind of a 3-and-D guy, which is, you know, maybe not, we knew the D, maybe not the 3, but they're a 3-seed and we'll be taking on the Nets. So you know, really interesting. Oh, also Matt Hill's coaching the Hawks and Royal Ivy's still on that Nets team. So a lot of Longhorns to watch in the NBA postseason.
The odds are really high that a Texas guy is going to win the championship, like win a championship this year. That's a lot of Longhorns in the playoffs. Like, we're going to claim that. Like, it doesn't matter even if, you know, they don't claim us. We're going to claim them, and it'll be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all, let's root for the Cavs because it's fun to watch the Cavs be pretty good. Even in a post LeBron, let's root for Durant, obviously, because we don't know how many more Durants have, and let's root for PJ Tucker. I mean, look, if the Sixers PJ do their thing, I would like PJ to get another ring. He just needs more rings to display at his very cool shoe shop down the street from me in Houston. Just discovered it the other day. I don't know how long it's been there, but I'll come with the name of it. I'll give it in a future show. I don't have it off the top of my head. But let's keep it basketball, but on the college varietal, Gerald. We'll start with the transfer portal. Two moves announced, or I guess one and a half, right? Arterio Morris is in the transfer portal. Rowan Brumbaugh is out of the transfer portal. He is officially transferred to Georgetown. Brumbaugh is a guy, it's maybe not shocking. He was a big recruit, but we brought in, you know, guards and had a lot of senior guards, and he just kind of redshirted this year. We knew that he was a longer-term prospect, even though I think he's got the potential to be a really, 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 really good college March point guard. Like, you know, Georgetown was really bad this year, but he's the type of kid who you could build your team around, and he'll stick around for 3 years and lead you on some deep runs. So I hate to lose him, but I'm not as surprised. Terrio Morris is interesting. You know, there was some smoke just because he was such a big recruit, and, you know, he wasn't utilized a ton early. He had a couple games where he really got deep, you know, minutes, got good run, but he also had a lot of games where he got, you know, just a little, and I imagine that's tough in the NIL and portal era when you think you're a lottery pick type of talent. And so just speaking from a purely basketball perspective, maybe thought he would be a featured player next year, and it could be a blow. He isn't gone. He could come back in theory, but he is in the portal.
Both of these hurt because I think Texas obviously was a very guard was we saw the power of good guards for Texas this year. And so I think I thought Terrio Morris was a guy who was going to play a ton this next year. So I'm curious to see. There's also potential like NIL considerations happening there as well. It's like there are a lot of things that could happen. Obviously, putting your name in the portal generally means you're exploring your options, but you don't have to leave. So I'm curious to see how it plays out and how the portal does giveth and taketh away. So hopefully the giveth is as good as the taketh away in this one.
I've heard some smoke on some interesting names. I won't comment because I'm not here to speculate, but until they become news rather than speculation. But a couple really, really solid, and similar to like the way you get Marcus Carr, senior, seasoned, made good tourney runs guards. Maybe that helps you narrow down the potential list of who I'm talking about. But there have been some names linked to Texas, nothing official, but could be interesting, right? If we have guys going out, we know we have some really good ones coming in, but it should be interesting. And speaking of really good ones coming in, right, Ron Holland continues to grow his expectation in a scary way. You know, I hope he can come in and be Kevin Durant day one, because he's moving further away from other recruits and closer to Kevin Durant in the hype pre arriving on the 40 acres. And I don't mean that to be hyperbole, right? We talked about the McDonald's All-American game, how he was the singular person who every scout was talking about. And then he went to the Nike Summit, where Team USA, you know, topped Team World 90-84 and Saturday night. And Holland led everything. He was the best player, like, by a mile. Had a team high 15 points, 9 of 10 of those from the free throw line, but love to see a big who can, you know, get to the rim, get free throws, and then make them. A team high 9 rebounds, 5 of those. Yeah, absolutely. We've seen that hurt in the past. A team high 9 rebounds, 5 of those offensive. A team high 5 assists. That's points, rebounds, assists. And, of course, a team high, because also an event record, 6 steals. So he was the guy. He did it all. And this is the game where you see the best players from the USA in the amateur level versus the best players from outside the States at the amateur level. And Holland again looked like the best player on the court. So it's looking a lot like a Kevin Durant. You know, we'll get him for a year. Let's really enjoy it. He can score from all the levels, do all the things. He has the size, he has the game to score at different areas. And then, you know, we'll see how high he can be in the lottery next the following year. Maybe we can also equate that into a deep March run at the same time, but do cherish his very surely 365 days that he spends on the 40 acres.
The way to build a I don't want to say success, like the way to build is not the right, but like talent begets more talent, right? Like the reason, like Texas doesn't land Kevin Durant without LaMarcus Aldridge, and they don't land LaMarcus Aldridge without TJ Ford, right? Like, the whole talent begets talent begets talent. And so getting this guy on campus, and there's also another player in this class that's also really, really good and a guard. So could be nice having both of those guys in the fold. But, you know, you turn this talent into some wins, to some exciting games, and that will keep the train moving. Rodney Terry is an accomplished recruiter. He has done a lot of really good work, and he's bringing in another accomplished recruiter to the staff. Take the good, you take the bad with this one, but it is what it is. They're trying to build a recruiting staff that can get talent into the established system.
Yeah, that's right. Frank Haith coming in is going to be really interesting. A guy who, you know, most recently was an assistant under Penny Hardaway at Memphis, has had several notable seasons as a head coach, including a 30-5 season in Missouri. He was at Texas previously with Coach Terry, was the lead recruiter for both LaMarcus Aldridge and D. Gibb. I will use Gerald's preferred nickname for Daniel. There have been some recruiting violations in his wake at his last few stops, but look, I mean, there's not a person in the country who doubts that he's an incredible recruiter. He will probably work well with the local Lamborghini dealership, you know, because we're in the NIL era. I love it. Like, let's get those guys. It's legal. He has Longhorn ties, and he has a ton of success. I think he was the AP Coach of the Year when he was at Missouri. You know, he was before his time on the recruiting trail.
That is it, right? He's a good basketball coach that did some things that were illegal then, were against the rules then, and are probably not now, depending on how you do it. If you're doing it now and you don't go through the proper channels, you're hustling in reverse, right? You should be able to. He's an OG NIL guy. It just happened to be underneath the table before. That's totally, it's legal now. So let's just keep it moving.
Yeah, I'm not mad about it in the slightest. A whole staff of them, right? We still have Ogden, McLean are staying. I think Riley, our strength and conditioning coach, is confirmed to have followed Beard to Ole Miss. He came with him from Tech, so no surprise there. Haven't heard Chapel or Chappelle, who came in later in Donewald, but I have seen them on the recruiting trail. So we'll hear kind of official as this staff shapes up. But one thing we know is Rodney Terry is a heck of a recruiter, and he knows staff with great recruiters and former head coaches. You know, that's kind of was the Beard philosophy, and it worked well, right? Texas went through an absolute storm and came out the other side because of that experience that was on the staff. So certainly Frank Haith would add well to that. Two other basketball notes around scheduling: Texas to play LSU at the Toyota Center in Houston next season, per Rodney Terry. Hasn't been officially announced, but it was reported. And then men's basketball will officially, in the 2023 Big East Big 12 battle, face reigning Coach of the Year Shaka Smart in the Big East Big 12 battle.
Sucks that game's going to be in Houston. That would be so fun to have on campus, but you know what? It's fun.
The LSU game. Yeah, the Big 12 Big East game, I don't believe, is in Houston.
It's not going to be in Austin either, I don't think.
No, I think it's at Marquette. So the boys will be heading to Milwaukee, which is, I always forget that's where Marquette is, and where Shaka's hair is necessary because it's cold up there, to cover the dome. But Gerald, let's leave basketball for a moment, cover some of the rest of the burnt orange world. Golf, we talked at the college level already, but at the pro level, it was the biggest golf weekend of the year this past weekend. The Masters, a rain-fueled, tree-falling, weird, you know, Masters. But at the end of the day, what happens? Golf is played. Longhorns finish towards the top. Top 10 finishes for Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler, who on different days each look like they may make a run to take the whole thing. Spieth came at the end on Sunday. He and Phil Mickelson both kind of came out of nowhere and put on a show to push Rahm, the ultimate champion. But, you know, top 10 finish at the Masters for two Longhorns who have won the Masters. You love to see it. And finally, in the Olympic sports, World Aquatics Diving World Cup is coming up in May, and there will be Longhorns present. Haley Hernandez named to the USA diving roster. Matt Scoggin to serve on the Team USA coaching staff. Again, this isn't collegiate. This is a pre-Olympic, full U.S. national team. All right, Gerald. let's get this thing into overgear here, our final two segments. What have you been watching? Well, Godzillatron, what have you been watching on your giant screen?
Kicking it into overdrive. My wife and I watched Bullet Train over the weekend. We wanted a movie we hadn't seen, but one that didn't require us to think a whole lot. And so Bullet Train was the one that we queued up. It feels like a even more stylized Guy Ritchie movie is the best way to describe it. Like, it's like if Guy Ritchie like threw neon paint at one of his movies is what it really is. Like, it was fun. Brad Pitt was Brad Pitt and did Brad Pitt things. Very like all of these very charismatic, watchable people doing like spitting like quick, like rapid fire dialogue that was wittier than it had any right to be. And like the yep. cast was stupid good. Like, it is not family friendly in the slightest bit. So like that is one, like, after you put the kids to bed, potentially like an hour or so after you put the kids to bed, just to make sure. But we had fun with it. It was dumb fun. We didn't have to pay a lot of attention, but we watched it and had fun twists and turns and all sorts of, you know, it was like, again, the only way I can describe it is like a Guy Ritchie movie on acid.
Yeah, it was. We watched it like pretty quickly after we watched The Glass Onion, and I realized all I want is glitzy, witty action, but suspense. You know, I don't even know what this genre is, the Knives Out to Bullet Train genre.
Like a thriller?
Yeah, I get. I mean, but it's like there's a little, it's an action comedy thriller that, you know, is like a little sardonic and dark, but like also, you know, you can just turn your brain off, like, but you can turn your brain on and buy into it. It's however you want to watch it. And it's low stakes, but it's like high reward. You know what I mean? That, I don't know. There's probably a better word for this, but yeah, Brad Pitt, Brian Tyree Henry, you know, Michael Shannon as White Death. I loved it. And my wife, there was a point where, like, I think she was like, ooh, is this going to be my new favorite movie? And, like, it just misses a little bit because it's, like, you know, it's not perfect, but it's really, really good. Zazie Beetz, forgot Zazie Beetz is in it. It's really good. We loved it. I would go back and watch it in a minute.
The ways that they contrive to keep them on the train, great.
Incredible. Yes, yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. We all bought into the conceit, and it was just, you know, it was like, okay, yeah, get back on
there.
Cool.
Let's keep it
moving. So, speaking of movies that, you know, honestly just are good and good, solid action, I watched the Bourne quadrology. I don't know. There's the Bourne trilogy, the original, all three Bournes. Then there is Jason Bourne, the newest of them. Then there's the one that has Jeremy Renner and no Matt Damon. And we watched half of that one. I didn't finish it, admittedly. I went straight into Jason Bourne. But we watched this over the past week. Like, we watched all of them. It was the thing that my wife and I watched. And I told you, like, if you listen to this section of the podcast, you understand. I like action movies. My wife loves action movies. Like, she really, truly does.
More
like,
than
she's,
you.
She's, yeah, absolutely. She, when I, we both watch John Wick. We talked about it on the, I talked about it on the podcast, but that was like, she was like, oh, this is perfect. It's my new favorite movie. That actually was everything that she was looking for. And so it's interesting whenever you watch, it's like when you go back and watch The Wire, when you watch Bourne and you watch like high tech stuff from a specific era of the early 2000s, that's like laughable what high tech was. So it's kind of fun when you laugh at that. But then when you just watch the story, it's just so well written and directed. And like, it's just, it's perfect what it is for what's called the American, James Bond. I'd never seen the most recent the just called Jason Bourne. I had seen the original trilogy, never the Renner nor the most recent. So you know, I went on and expanded my Bourneology, I guess. But it's great, man. It just doesn't get much better than that. It's just simple, perfect. Yeah, no notes.
There are those movies that change action movies for a few years, and like Bourne Identity changed the way, and honestly for the worse, I'll be honest with you, the way that they shot action sequences in that like era, like a few years after the first Bourne movie, everything was like quick cuts and shaky cam.
Yep.
And nobody yep. did it as good as the Bourne movies. But like that, the Bourne Identity is one of those movies that, like, for the next 5 years, every action movie is going to be this. And I wasn't mad about it except for the shaky cam stuff.
By the third, you know, movie, so let's call it the almost sixth hour, my wife finally was like, do they have to move the camera every single time? Like, I'm getting motion sickness on these, you know, the quick cut fight scenes where it's just like you're rolling and it's, you know, like you have to look through your fingers so you don't get queasy. But it took us a couple hours before we really realized that we could do with less of it, because it is, you know, it's just every other detail is great.
So that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I am banging the drum on a great podcast appearance. We have a wonderful podcast, and we have some wonderful guests, but there are podcasts bigger than us, believe it or not. One of those, a few. One of those called The Pivot. So the three hosts are Ryan Clark, who played at LSU and then had a long career as a defensive back in the NFL, Channing Crowder, who, you know, is a behemoth specimen, nightmare defensive end, that position, edge end, whatever, who I think played for your Miami Dolphins there for a while, Gerald.
He did.
And then a Florida running back who, you know, we like Florida running backs around here, Cedric Baxter, stand up. Fred Taylor, a legend of the early 2000s. I believe I had a, was it a starter jacket? I had something from the Jaguars expansion team with Mark Brunell and Fred Taylor, etc. It was a fun team. But anyways, those are the three hosts. And they've gone viral with some of their usually comedic, hilarious moments. They've had, you know, great guests, Kevin Hart, conversations about nudist beliefs, that just, like, again, it's wild. They're good hosts. They're funny. They ask some good questions as well. And I'm recommending the podcast specifically because this week Steve Sarkisian was on it. And the one thing I love, and I haven't seen a ton of the podcast, like just sat down and watched whole episodes. I've mainly seen the clips that have gone viral, and you get the funny stuff. What I loved in this one, and there were some good nuggets, and there was some laughs, and some great stories, but you saw three guys talking to Sark, and you saw the human Steve Sarkisian come in, right? There's Steve Sarkisian, the coach, who's great, and he's very smart. We know that. And there's Steve Sarkisian, the recruiter, and he's good at that. We know that. Sark the human is certainly the best out of it, right? Like, there's people who are going to like his coaching style and people who are going to hate it. That's the nature of fandom. But I don't know that there's anyone who associates himself with the University of Texas that can, in good faith, say that they don't like Steve Sarkisian, the human being. Like, he owns where he has been, his past, and honestly praises and acknowledges how it's made him into the man he is, right? The way he talks about his wife, L'Oreal Sarkisian, and basically, you know, how he's gone on this journey of rediscovering, redeveloping, recentering, regrounding, honestly reconstituting his entire, you know, identity and belief system, and credits just the amount that she supported him, challenged him, pushed him to be better. Like, she's, you know, and he glows when he talks about her. He, you know, he's so in love with this woman who clearly is a true partner to him. But then when he just talks about, you know, he didn't mention them by name, but, like, think Jaleel Billingsley, and it's like, oh, this guy gets another chance. And Sark said, yeah, I'm going to be the guy who probably errs on giving players too many chances. You know, obviously there's a point when you can't any longer, but, you know, I'm here because I had second chances, right? And he goes into detail, and he really praises Nick Saban for the chance that he gave him. And you've heard him say that before, but, I mean, it's just the candor, the openness, the transparency, the kind of life philosophy. You've heard some of the quotes from Sark before. They were in his office, so they read some of them. We've heard him say, you know, be a thermostat, not a thermometer, and some of those things, right? It's just, he has a really sage philosophy. Like, he has the wisdom that only comes with earning it, right? There's people who, you know, are smart, and people who you know, are almost wise, but true wisdom, I think, comes through living it, through earning it, through going through the fires and coming out and living to tell about it, and helping keep people from having to go through. So, I mean, it's just, I liked Sark already. It's all of these human moments outside of football that makes me truly love Steve Sarkisian. Like, I am unabashedly a fan of the human being that Steve Sarkisian is. I think we are lucky and fortunate to have a man of his caliber at the helm of the University of Texas football program, especially at this moment. He talked NIL portal, the whole thing. He just gets it. In all of those, he's centered in a philosophy of how he views the world. And I think it just matches the time, the moment, the situation, and hopefully equates to success.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about it before. He there's a level of self-awareness from Steve Sarkisian that I think only comes in people who have hit rock bottom. And I think getting fired at USC was his rock bottom. You know, he had his dream job. He came up under Pete Carroll, and, you know, he talked about in the podcast, like, seeing Texas in that Rose Bowl game and knowing they were in trouble when they were trying to go for their next national championship. But, like, he had his dream job. He went to Washington and turned them around in a couple years and then landed back where he wanted to and blew it because of his own personal demons. So I think there's a level of self-awareness and candor and self-assurance, really, when you've hit rock bottom and built yourself back up. And so, you know, we still – the on-field results are left to be determined for Steve Sarkisian at Texas. You and I have been gone on record and said we feel like he has them moving in the right direction. I think the proof will be in the pudding, you know, this fall, whether or not Texas continues to trend upward. But, you know, wherever he lands and wherever he ends up, you know, if it's, you know, years at Texas or he's here for a short time and ends up somewhere else, like, I'm going to be in his corner because I love seeing people who have put things back together and rebuilt it for themselves. I'm banging the drum this week very quickly on the University of Texas as running back university. So the NFL draft is right around the corner, and we obviously know Bijan Robinson is the top name at the running back position. How he will land in the draft is still yet to be told because the NFL and really football in general seems to undervalue running backs, even though every time there's a difference maker running back, they like set the league on fire. Right? Christian McCaffrey was the best thing in the league for like 2 years, right? Texas was good this year, mainly because of Bijan Robinson in a lot of ways. So we know where he's at, but there's been a lot of scuttle that like Roschon Johnson is on a name on a lot of people's lips, and you know, there's been praise for him up and down. He's a character guy. We said it, like, he's going to interview really well, and so if his testing was even remotely good, he'd, you know, at least get a shot. And he tested pretty well, and his name is on the lips. And so I say all that to say there's been a lot of like talk about the legacy of Texas running backs, and I've seen two different instances where people have omitted one of the greats in Texas history just because there's so stinking many of them. I saw one that just completely glossed over Cedric Benson. I saw one that completely glossed over Priest Holmes. I saw an article that just forgot Jamaal Charles existed, right? Like, there have been so many good running backs at the University of Texas that it's just really hard to remember them all. If you get Earl and Ricky, you're doing well, right? But there is an opportunity for Texas to continue to cement itself, I think, as running back university in the future. You know, we've talked about Cedric Baxter's already on campus, and, you know, sources that we have say he might be the truth. He might be the real deal. But, you know, Jonathan Brooks is still on campus, and we've seen flashes of brilliance from him. So I'm just banging the drum this week on it feels good to really be in a position where Texas and you know, running back coach and apparently ace recruiter Tashard Joyce potentially will be in a position to just have their pick of the litter. And it looks like they may be doing that again this year. So Texas returning to its status as RBU and couldn't happen quick enough.
Yeah. And Sark actually on that podcast, all the guys, you know, the NFL guys, it kept up with the draft cycle. They care about college, but they really keep up with the pros as these players enter it. And we're talking about Bijan and Roschon as humans, not just running backs. Like the fact that, you know, while they're training with other players getting ready for the draft, those two are leading Bible study for that, right? Like, it doesn't matter about the fact that they're reading their Bible. It matters that they are A, leaders, and B, you know, like, connecting with these other people on a human level to make them better. Like, it just speaks to everything we always knew, and both of those guys were special. I've seen mock drafts that had, of course, Bijan one, but Roschon ahead of other running backs who played college in the state of Texas, maybe down the road at College Station, in the top five. So I really hope when, you know, we're making this list and talking about all-time greats, we have Roschon on there, because he goes on to have a, you know, Ronnie Brown type of career where he's behind someone's other, you know, running backs who Brandon Jones, who's behind Ronnie Brown, running backs who you know, didn't get as many touches or as much headline in college, but just, you know, have solid, long, great careers. And I have no doubt that both of these guys have everything it takes to do that. And that'll only help that recruiting Gerald's talking about with 2024 number one running back looking good.
Darren McFadden and Felix Jones comes to mind with this duo, except I think both careers and top ends might be higher. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer on Twitter at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. RBU, DBU, defensive tackle U, all the U's.